The idea for this seminar emerged originally last year when our group was looking at issues around faith and the scientific worldview. It seemed to some of us that many of the issues that were arising in that context pushed us towards some rather deeper and wider questions about modernity. This very elusive and difficult word, which we throw around quite a lot in philosophical and theological discussion. So this year's seminar has been an attempt to broaden out a little from the issues we looked at last year and to think through tradition and modernity, both Islam and Christianity, in their different ways, have concepts of tradition. And in the last couple of days, we found out just how different some of those ways are. But both of us, as religious confessions, hold that there is a set of practices, a style of wisdom in life and in prayer, transmitted by teaching from generation to generation, with bound up in that certain assumptions about authority, about being able to receive with confidence and gratitude something that is given to you. Modernity, on the other hand, is often seen as not even a system, but a general style of human living and understanding, which lays primary emphasis on the individual, the individual's choices, and the individual's liberty to map out their journey through life. Modernity, in the most general sense, it seems, encourages us to be rather suspicious of what is given to us or offered to us, especially if it comes with authority attached to it. So some of these very broad brush ideas were around at the beginning of our discussions. Where have we got to? We don't, at these seminars, issue an agreed statement. And that, I have to say, takes a great deal of pressure off the participants. We don't have to spend the last day and a half arguing over where the paragraph breaks come in a communique or anything like that. We simply, I was going to say we talk until we drop. It's almost true this time. It's been a very strenuous program. But we discuss, we try to open those discussions and simply go away with a sense, I hope, of enriched understanding. But I want to pick up very briefly in these opening remarks a few themes that have kept coming back. First of all, modernity. It's really a very modern thing that people assume that being modern is something distinctive. I don't imagine that in the 13th century, being modern was a meaningful concept at all, either in the Christian or in the Muslim world. But being modern has, for at least 150, perhaps 200 years, had an evaluative content in a lot of Western civilization. Being pre-modern or anti-modern has been to mark yourself out as reactionary, as thoughtless, sometimes as non-emancipated. Modernity, as it's often used, in other words, has an evaluative dimension. And that in itself, as I said, is a modern thing. At the same time, modernity is not a simple concept at all. As someone pointed out earlier in our discussion today, there is a modernity which simply means knowing your way around the world of technology, the resources that are, as a matter of fact, available in the world of today. And the fact that we are here, many of us, because we've flown in on aeroplanes, that some of our discussions have been streamed electronically, and so forth, that's modernity. We know how to use it, or at least we know people who know how to use it more significantly. And that's rather different from modernity as an evaluative thing, modernity as a worldview. So we gave ourselves a few cautions in throwing the word around too loosely. But when we were pressed to think through some of the evaluative dimension of modernity, one theme which came up a number of times yesterday and today was the way in which modernity, in this evaluative sense, had made a difference not only to how we understood ourselves as human beings, but how we understood our place in the whole natural order. It's typical of a certain kind of modern culture, self-consciously modern culture, that it takes a highly instrumental view of the environment, including sometimes the human environment. It privileges, it seems, choice over wisdom or even reasoning. And it can lead us to a very strange view of the isolation of human agents and human speakers from the natural world they're in, and can lead us to take for granted that the only relationship that matters on the part of the things around us and the people around us is their relationship with me, the choosing, thinking, planning, controlling me. Now, it's fundamental to a religious vision of the world, whether Christian or Muslim, that before I am on the scene, other people and other things already have a relationship to the sacred, to God, to the source of all meaning and all reality. So that when I approach the world around or when I approach another person, I approach it with a sense that there is a dimension of it that's just not accessible to my control. It exists already in relation to another level of reality. That's part of what it means, we were reminded, to believe that the world is created. There is a relationship of reality to the depth and source of life, quite independent of what I make of it and how I use it. And more than once in our discussion, the theme came through. Modernity, as a worldview, as a general approach, has tended to weaken that sense of, I think the phrase was, the face of reality turned towards God. And that means that characteristic of modernity as a worldview is an idea that all realities are, so to speak, exhausted in their lateral relations to one another. So when I know how to use this or that, I know all there is to know. When I know how to negotiate with and sometimes, frankly, to use another person, I know all there is to know. The sense of a dimension that lures me more deeply disappears. So that was one theme that in various ways kept coming back. That the religious perspective on reality, Muslim, Christian, and indeed in traditions quite other than those two, was very much at odds with that instrumental or exploitative vision of our environment. Very naturally, of course, in that connection, we found ourselves talking about freedom. Freedom, the great value of modernity as a worldview, but frequently freedom in the modern context regarded simply as the fact that nobody tells me what to do. That I have a choice of objects and no constraint on what I choose. In our traditions, freedom, of course, means something rather different. And it's sometimes been characterized as a freedom that is my liberty to exercise what I truly am as a human being. My liberty to discover and to live out the destiny that is there in virtue of my being created by God, and loved by God, and engaged with by God. So, from the very beginning of the seminar, and some of you will remember David Hart's very powerful presentation on Tuesday, from the beginning of the seminar, divergent views of freedom have been around in our discussions, and you'll see how they bear on the concern we have with individualism, with the stress on abstract choice. But the third feature that comes out here is that the religious perspective takes time seriously. We learn as human beings, quite simply. We learn. We build up a sense of who we are and what we are capable of through narrative. We look at what has made us what or who we are, what has brought us where we are. We reflect on that, and we regard it as constitutive of the identity that we hold. A cultural worldview which takes us out of time, which says at any given moment you can be whatever you want to be, you can do whatever you want to do, cuts us off from that sense that we are always learning. Now, that third point about time, of course, relates to how we understand tradition. And this is where, in our discussions, we find ourselves frequently struggling. Both Christians and Muslims in the discussion were profoundly conscious of what I think we can best call a sense of indebtedness. We have learned from those who have walked the way of faith before us. But does that learning mean that there is never any innovation? And does it mean that there is never any criticism of what has gone before? Does tradition, the process of handing on wisdom across the centuries, does it build up steadily, uncovering more and more truth, more and more possibilities in a straight line? Does it simply repeat or reproduce initial encounters with God? Or does it sometimes need to be challenged, its direction shifted, its presuppositions questioned? How far this is something we can explore in detail now, I don't know. But I think there was a sense in some of our discussions, at least, that Christians and Muslims did not always approach tradition or history in the same way. And yet these questions about how you legitimately challenge what has been handed on, how you question what's received, all of those were very clearly around in the discussion. Nobody was very keen on supposing that tradition was always simply about repetition. Faithfully doing the same thing across the centuries turns out to be a lot more complicated than it sounds. Because as has sometimes been said, as was said by Cardinal Newman among others, to do the same thing now as you were doing 100 years ago means doing something different from what people were actually doing 100 years ago. How do we make sense of that? Continuity and change. Well, those are some of the areas that we've been talking about in the last 2 days. As usual, when academics get together, definitions which seem straightforward at first have been thoroughly confused in the discussion, put into the melting pot, stirred around, and are still washing in a kind of dissolved state as we speak. But that's why we have these discussions, to stop ourselves taking concepts so much for granted that we become unintelligent in our use of them. So both our great words, tradition and modernity, have been probed, tested, approached from very diverse perspectives. But perhaps the most fundamental thing which has come through, the most fundamental opposition between religious traditions as we've been discussing them and the evaluative modern worldview, has been something to do with a sense of giftedness. We found ourselves as people living within religious traditions, wanting to say our primary relationship to what we receive is gratitude for the opening up of possibilities. And our concern about the modern worldview was how little room it seemed to give for that fundamentally grateful appropriation of reality, truth, as it came to us. Is the modern world view, and with all the qualifications we've entered on that, is it somehow hostile to or suspicious of the very idea of gift and gratitude? And is that one of the things that makes religious belief and practice difficult in our age, and sometimes it seems inaccessible to some of our contemporaries? One last point before I ask my colleagues here to join in. One last point, I think, is that we were also aware of the way in which living in the context of an individualistic, freedom-oriented, choice-oriented cultural climate, how that inevitably put to us questions as religious believers that weren't there before and which we couldn't ignore. So the agenda that some people would define as emancipation, very characteristic of modernity, that does mean that religious traditions have to confront issues that they have not systematically looked at previously. Gender questions are just one of the more obvious cases in point there. We can't ignore them. We can't simply repeat what was there before, because the climate in which we stand has changed, and what we communicate is therefore going to sound different. So there is a political dimension to this as well. And one of the most difficult and most unresolved areas of our discussion also had to do with how some of these considerations carry across into politics in the widest possible sense. There are those defenders of tradition who would say very firmly, there's something fundamentally wrong about modern democracy. But once modern democracy has raised its question, how do you involve the free consent of the mass of a population in the business of life together? Once you've raised that question, it's not enough just to say it's the wrong question. And that's part of the struggle that we're involved in as people of faith looking at the modern worldview. I sense that there's some unfinished business here around shared worship and prayer, which could take us another few weeks to tease out further. And also what's been said about postmodernity and the arrogance of modernity is not a bad point at which to leave the discussion. I suspect one of the things that we've found ourselves all wanting to say and sharing in the last couple of days is a resistance to what some people would see as the characteristic modern approach, which says this is the position of the reasonable person. No reasonable person could disagree with this. We will tolerate you if you disagree, but you know, basically everybody is reasonable in this way, this modern way. Postmodernity has, at the intellectual level, dealt a bit of a blow to that, overdue. But in order to make that something other than simply a negative and nihilistic move, I think we do have to come back to the question of what is the self as constituted, the subject as constituted by the sacred, constituted by relation to God, not just a free-floating empty signifier. And I think that's where the conversation, the dialogue continues. And I hope that in this discussion you've picked up some flavor of what we've been talking about in the last couple of days and why we've enjoyed ourselves so much. So I'd like to thank members of the panel. Thank you all for being here and for your support of this seminar at Georgetown.